a purpose or the impact that we can drive with access to justice is not a thing we do 5 days a year for employee volunteering days. It's what we do every day. And sometimes we build products every day and we're looking at driving, saving someone time or driving more efficiency or creating transparency or building new analytics reports where the law firm might be like, hey, how does this connect to our access to justice mission? But really supporting an industry that's grounded in ethical principles and making them more efficient, giving people time back, supporting younger people coming into this profession who want to do more intellectual work, less busy work. These are all really motivating things. And as we go on this journey together, we'll continue to share more with you. And you'll see, I get so much kick out of driving meaningful impact and could be the tiniest impact, but we do this every day. And that's how it starts to build up.
Today on Law Next, in the world of legal technology, few companies loom as large as Thomson Reuters, whose products such as Westlaw, Practical Law, HighQ, FindLaw, 3E, and many others span virtually every aspect of law practice. My guest today, Kriti Sharma, is Chief Product Officer for Legal Tech at Thomson Reuters, a role she stepped into in October 2021, just about a year ago. She is internationally recognized expert in artificial intelligence and was formerly the Vice President of Artificial Intelligence and Ethics at UK software company Sage Group. She's also a founder of AI for Good UK, a foundation that works to make AI tools more ethical and equitable, and developer of Rainbow, a digital companion for women facing domestic violence in South Africa. She's been named to the Forbes 30 Under 30 list for advancements in AI. She was appointed a United Nations Young Leader in 2018 and is an advisor to both the United Nations Technology Innovation Labs and to the UK Government's Center for Data Ethics and Innovation. Her TED Talk on keeping bias out of AI has been viewed more than 2 million times. This is Bob Ambrosi, and you're listening to Law Next, the podcast that features the innovators and entrepreneurs who are driving what's next in law. And before we get to today's interview, let's hear about the sponsors who make this podcast possible. Paradigm is building a new standard for legal technology. With 6 industry-leading products under one roof, Paradigm empowers lawyers across the spectrum of practice areas, geography, and business needs. Made up of the practice management platforms Practice Panther, Meriscase, Lolly Law, and Bill for Time, together with the online payment solution Headnote and the legal accounting software TrustBooks, Paradigm is every law firm's one-stop shop for industry-leading technology. Learn more at joinparadigm.com. Now on to my interview with Kriti Sharma. Kriti, welcome to Law Next.
I'm super excited to be here, Bob. Thank you.
I'm really honored to speak with you, and it's great to have you on the program. As I said, you're approaching your first anniversary at Thomson Reuters. I could spend an entire show talking about your career before joining Thomson Reuters, but I think my listeners are going to be more interested in your current work. But that said, could you kind of give me the nutshell version of your experience prior to coming to Thomson Reuters?
Yeah, Bob, I love building things. I started building robotics tools as a kid, built my own computer. I was always interested and fascinated in solving problems around me, which could be as mundane as building a robot that fetched candy from the snack bar at 3 p.m. every day. My first invention, very proud of it. I don't think my parents were
perfect
as much. But
I hope you patented that.
to more foundational challenges that face society, which have been underinvested in with technology. So just really, really curious always in building technology tools and using it as a force for good for society around us. And one of the reasons that fascinated me about legal tech and this world is the tremendous opportunity to create access to justice. And that's why I'm here today.
Well, you anticipated my next question, because as far as I can tell from your background, you really hadn't worked in the legal world prior to joining Thomson Reuters. So I wonder if you could just kind of expand a little bit on what it was about joining Thomson Reuters that attracted you.
Just a bit of background in terms of things that I've done, the innovation, AI, tech, mainly with the lens of solving a bigger challenge. That sounds really scary at first, right? And that's a pattern I've worked in throughout my career. Over the last several years, I've particularly focused on SaaS products, so B2B software as a service, where we're bringing in consumer-level experiences or user friendliness to enterprise or B2B applications. And that's a world I've really enjoyed, bringing the same kind of superpower of delightful user experience or ease of use to enterprise product experiences. And I've done that in a lot of different companies at various growth stages, from my own startup, which was the most amazing and the most terrifying thing I've ever done, to growth stage businesses, to larger ones. And frankly, when TR, the opportunity with Thomson Reuters came up, what attracted me the most was the ability to bring in that same innovation mindset to a very purpose-driven industry, where the tremendous opportunity to transform is right here. I worked in fintech about 10, 12 years ago when that industry was going through this phenomenal change, whether it was contactless payments or mobile applications or B2B software payments or APIs and next generation of net new banks emerging to give, again, equitable access to financial inclusion around the world. And the opportunity with legal tech just very much reminded me of that same phase of a big transformation and change happening in the industry. So when TR, the opportunity with TR, Thomson Reuters came up to do that in the legal tech space with an organization that is rooted in the foundations of unbiased information and knowledge that we see, whether it's from our journalism work or our research and content work, some of the products that you mentioned, building AI applications or technology experiences or software experiences on top of that was really, really great opportunity. And I could not say no. And here I am.
You alluded to the fact that you have this background in forming founding AI for Good and in building applications focused on helping to solve global issues and social issues. How does that background carry over into your work at Thomson Reuters and inform what you'll be doing at, or what you are already doing at Thomson Reuters?
So Bob, a lot of the work I've done in the social impact world was, for many years, I think it would be fair to say, was kind of my weekend job, my side gig, right? My day job was building software, SaaS products, cloud experiences, and just very high growth, innovative environments, whether it's VC-backed or PE-backed environments, large public listed companies. And then I had my weekend job, which is all about building exciting social impact work where I could really use the skills I had to solve problems. What I found in the legal tech industry is the opportunity to turn my weekend job into my day job, and in that, bringing in that same problem-solving mindset, studying the human needs, whether it's the needs of an associate at the verge of burnout, or it's the needs of partners looking for more transparency, or corporate legal departments, in-house GCs looking to bring forward the DE&I or ESG agenda and making it real, not just a policy on the website. Or in the case of Bindle, helping 100 million visitors in the US getting a deeper understanding of their rights and where to go to get help next. It really does feel like my weekend hobby or weekend job has become my day job. And what I hope to bring to this group, and I've been doing this for about 9 or 10 months, as you pointed out, relatively new to the legal space, is bringing that mindset of problem solving and taking a human outcome and design-led approach, working backwards from that to applying it to this industry. I must admit, I was a bit terrified at first of coming into an industry that I did not know very much about. I grew up with some lawyers around me, but I'm not a lawyer. I'm not from the legal world. I'm a tech person who enjoys building products. But I've been really, really amazed by the welcome that I've received from the legal tech community, not just at TR, Thomson Reuters, but even more broadly around in the legal tech innovation space. There is so much exciting activity happening, whether it's early growth stage companies or early stage businesses, customers who are building their own in-house innovation teams. I feel like I've found my people.
Well, that's good. Although I would note, I think I read that your mother was a broadcast journalist, right? Which is I'm glad to see that. But you mentioned access to justice and talking about this. Do you see that's been obviously an issue that's impacting the legal world throughout the world. There's just a general perception that very many people in the world are not getting access to the legal help they need. Do you see that as part of your charge, as included within your mission to begin to or to help the company address access to justice issues?
Yeah, absolutely. And at Thomson Reuters, for sure, we have tremendous assets that we can bring to support that mission and informing the way forward for our communities, whether it's making it easier for people to attend a virtual hearing with our digital courts work that we've been doing with Case Center. I see that impact when I hear the story of a mother who doesn't have to arrange childcare, miss a day at work because she can arrange a virtual hearing or share evidence more transparently from the comfort of their home. It's just one tiny example, but so powerful. The same thing with the work we're doing now with Fine Law in bringing the assets that we have and the knowledge that TR Thomson Reuters sits on. I apologize, I keep saying TR, it's our internal language for Thomson Reuters.
We all know what you're talking about.
Okay. Like I did tell you, Bob, I found my people. And with Fine Law, for example, where we're bringing in low-cost services to the front line, to consumers, so they can get access to services, whether it's about estate planning or creating a new business where we can support the local economy and the communities in doing that and making it more affordable. I think that is this is our purpose, or the impact that we can drive with access to justice is not a, to my point earlier, a thing we do 5 days a year for employee volunteering days. It's what we do every day. And sometimes when we build products every day, and we're looking at saving someone time, or driving more efficiency, or creating transparency, or building new analytics reports. Where the law firm might be like, "Hey, how does this connect to our access to justice mission?" But really supporting an industry that's grounded in ethical principles and making them more efficient, giving people time back, supporting younger people coming into this profession, who want to do more intellectual work, less busy work. These are all really, really motivating things. And as we go on this journey together, we'll continue to share more with you. And you'll see, I get so much kick out of driving meaningful impact, and could be the tiniest impact, but we do this every day. And that's how it starts to build up.
Yeah. You've talked about what attracted you to this role. When you were brought in as chief product officer, I mean, what was the sort of the charge you were given in this role? What is your overarching role and responsibility in this position?
Yeah, great question. So I was brought in, and I was really there were just a couple of very high level themes that were shared, and the rest is I've worked very closely with our customers, Bob, to really understand what needs to be done. The biggest value that Thomson Reuters sees is again building on the solid foundations that we have with the wonderful content resources we have. You know, the quality of which is second to none. We are really the market leaders with tools like Westlaw and Practical Law and the wonderful products we have in the software space that are already gaining traction and scale, like HiQ. We have a lot of the right foundations. I spent the first couple months just listening to our customers, and I had 50 client meetings in the first 50 days, from law firms to corporate legal in-house GCs to everyone else in between. And I heard all sorts of stuff, the good, the bad, the ugly. One theme that really stood out, which was common to every single one of those 50 conversations, was they all talked about people. Talked about the experience of the employees. We talked about experiences of their clients and how that needs to change. And this tremendous shift in the three P's, rather, from being purely profit-driven conversations to people first, giving them a purpose in their work, and then making sure that we're doing it profitably with the right products in place. So what that led to is our product strategy of building experiences that are designed around the human need. And we all have technology fatigue. If we're going to build yet another tool that no one uses, great job. Not really, right? There's so much tech out there, whether it's legal tech or any other enterprise tech, that is this tech for the sake of tech. But we really need to focus on driving adoption and building experiences that people want to use. So that has been the biggest focus. And you might say, well, every company is trying to do that, and what makes you different, and really is the way we are building things. So to give you an example, you know, as we bring our platform, this end-to-end experience to life, it's not something that we will launch in 3 years from now. It's every action that our teams are doing now every day is tied into giving that value to our customers sooner. And that's a big shift. We have a lot of different products and we're bringing them together. But the real difference that we're bringing in now is this faster innovation cycle. So to give you an example, HiQ used to launch new updates every 6 months. We would do 50 releases and it's a lot of change management. We're now going into shipping. Since the beginning of this year, we ship and bring new value to our customers every month. And then they're going to get it even faster. What that means is we can react and respond to those needs of our customers and learn from them. Instead of taking 6 months to do that, we might not be able to do all of that in 1 month, but we can bring a lot of the most important slices of value forward.
Not yet a year into her position as Chief Product Officer for Legal Tech at Thomson Reuters, Kriti Sharma has defined a vision of creating a platform that is open, connected, and smart, with the goal of empowering legal professionals and their teams. When we return, Sharma unpacks exactly what she means by that and how it plays out in product development. We'll also learn more about her thoughts on AI in legal and specifically the issue of bias in AI algorithms, which was the subject of her TED Talk. But first, let's hear about the sponsors whose generosity supports this podcast. Workers' compensation lawyers need tools that support them in the background, from the courtroom to the office and everywhere in between. Mira's Case helps lawyers simplify their billing, streamline their documents, and automate their time tracking wherever they go. Mira's Case does the work for you so you can focus on what's really important in your day. Learn more by visiting miriscase.com. That's MERUSCASE.com today. Welcome back to Law Next. This is Bob Ambrogi. My guest, Kriti Sharma, is Chief Product Officer for Legal Tech at Thomson Reuters, a position she was named to less than a year ago. As you heard her say earlier, she spent her first 2 months in the job meeting with clients, learning about their needs. She is now pursuing a vision of product development that she describes as open, connected, and smart. As we return, she explains more about what that means for TR's products and its customers. The phrase I keep seeing TR use and seen in connection with your name also is open, connected, and smart with regard to products. Is that reflective of what you're talking about here?
That's right. So that's exactly the platform strategy. And I'm pleased it's starting to stick. So it is the open, connected, and smart platform we're doing. And let me unpack a bit more, Bob, on what I mean by that. Because it's just three words, and how does that turn into reality? And so going back to my 50 meetings in the first 50 days, which is quite revealing, is these themes then in how we bring this experience to life for the people who are interacting with our software every day. And the insights we learned were on the theme of opening up the ecosystems. And you know, we need to be where our users hang out. If our users are hanging out in Microsoft Teams, sharing all kinds of gifts, and I'm sure more meaningful work too. We want to be where those experiences are. They're working in Microsoft Word. They're working in a DMS tool. We don't want to force them into an experience that they don't enjoy or places where they already are. So being opening up our ecosystem more, connecting into where they are is a key part of our strategy. And this includes things like, for example, plugging ourselves into Microsoft Teams is the platform of choice where they can do workflow interactions. They can access the content that they need right at the point of need. So that's the open part, as an example, the open connected smart. Connected theme is all about creating shared mental models. So you don't, as a user, have to switch from one product to the other and learn yet again. Really, really hard problem to solve. Easy to say, we're going to connect our products. Really hard to do. We're starting with little things like data flowing from one product to the other, example, Legal Tracker to HiQ, or insights coming in from expertise coming from practical law matter maps into your journey flows in HiQ. So these little things that are starting to connect the experience. And then smart, which is our play and investment in bringing in AI and automation expertise, which is my pleasure and my excitement and my expertise to give our users the most important thing they need, which is time back. And to that effect, we're making investments in capabilities like ThoughtTrace, which is an acquisition we closed just over 100 days ago, to bring in very highly nuanced and specific AI capability to solve certain problems. I do not think general models or general AI is the answer to the needs of a highly knowledge-driven or knowledge-based industry like legal. And so bringing in technology that specifically solves certain problems with that automation, identifying the right level of information in the right moment and context is important. So we're working across these canons, open, connected, and smart. And the way we are executing is not magically is going to appear a big reveal X months from now. It's the work we're doing in every release, and these releases are happening a lot more faster now.
Yeah. When you say you don't think the sort of the general AI models are applicable in law, maybe I'm misstating what you just said, but can you elaborate on that? What do you mean by that?
Yeah. So I mean more about bringing in domain expertise to train AI capabilities that apply to a problem, right? If you think more generically about the AI community, in the AI community, the different trains of thoughts, right? You could train generic AI system to solve problems for everything, or you could bring in human expertise to train models that solve specific problems and do those really well. And our approach is to solve specific problems with a much higher level of accuracy and building in user trust. So this means giving more explainability or configuration or control to the human user, so the humans are in charge. And this is the pattern we've certainly seen in a lot of different industries, especially when the human expertise is so high, as is the case in the business, in the world of law. It is, it's really important to design the technology around those human needs. You want to work with them rather than at them.
Right, right. On the topic of AI, your TED Talk was focused on keeping bias out of AI. And of course, you were talking, I think, in that talk more about, you know, racial bias and gender bias. But what about within the legal context? Is the threat of human bias built into AI a problem? And how are you addressing that at Thomson Reuters?
Yeah, so Bob, it's a challenge regardless of the domain that is observed in many different industries. And to give you very specific examples of that is the training data that is often you use to build an AI model. And if the training data is biased, it could be, for example, historical case data. It could be bias of the writers themselves or the content creators if there's not good enough checks and balances in place. If the underlying data is biased, you can't prevent easily anyway the AI models to become biased. And when you use the AI models, AI capabilities to make decisions or support decision making, the outcomes would be biased. So some of the examples that I referred to in the talk and that I've seen in many other areas is the bias that you would often find in other B2B systems like resume, CV scanning or candidate screening in HR matters, or unfortunately in many countries in the public in public services as well, so whether it's about identifying vulnerable groups in the community or repeat offenders. And that's a lot of the work where governments around the world are now starting to take a very cautious approach and have to and must take a more cautious approach. In the legal industry, it's not very dissimilar. Whenever we are using large amounts of content, the quality of that content, the quality and the training of the people who are building the models, who are training the AI, their qualifications just as important. Say, what excites me about PR in our space and building these capabilities here is the tremendous amount of expertise that we have and the knowledge that we've accumulated over the years and going back to our foundations of being an organization that represents truth and unbiased information across the board. is to solve that. It's a long journey where, you know, a lot of the legal industry is still early stages in creating and truly benefiting from AI technology. But I do think if there's there are very few industries that can do it with the rigor that legal industry can do it. I believe financial services is another world because they've been used to more regulations and operating with certain principles compared to some of the more newer industries where some of the ethics of code and code of ethics have been missing.
Yeah. I was just at the American Association of Law Libraries convention where a topic there, a topic for the last few of their conventions has been this issue of bias in AI results, in legal research results, not sort of, you know, racial and gender bias, but the fact that different legal research platforms deliver different results, in part based on the you know, just the human biases of the developers who built those platforms. And I know there's been a call for a number of years for legal research companies and other kinds of legal tech companies to be much more transparent about the algorithms that go into their research tools. Do you think that Thomson Reuters is transparent enough about that or needs to be more transparent about that?
I would say, Bob, as an industry, not only for legal, for anybody working with AI tools, there is a lot of work that we're yet to do, right? And I would just speak more broadly about the landscape that we are seeing in many jurisdictions around the world. There are some frameworks that really stand out as the ones that are starting to gain traction. So an example would be the OECD AI framework, which is really designed around some of these principles. I think that whilst we have so much to gain from AI by using the technology to drive efficiency and impact, I do think it would be a missed opportunity if you don't do it in the right way. And that is the ask I would have of all people, everybody who's working in this space, to start to think about those questions and start to ground that in our everyday actions. Measuring lack of bias is a really hard problem too, by the way, right? How do you measure whether a system is biased or unbiased? We're starting to see new frameworks emerge in that space. I still think it's very nascent. I still think it's early stages, but I've never seen so much more momentum in my career on this topic. And your example of the last few years of conversation headline being this issue is a very real one.
Yeah. I read somewhere, and I don't know whether this is accurate, that it said that you have called for a philosophy of embracing botanists. And this is, I think, a couple of years old reference. But yeah. Is that accurate? And what does it mean?
you bring back memories, Bob. So a few years ago, I don't know if it's still relevant, a few years ago, I was building a number of AI products and I was building a strong community of ethical AI technologists. I was fortunate enough to be part of that. And we had this really interesting debate of a lot of the community kind of leaning towards hiding the fact that you're talking to a machine or there's an AI behind it. It's more of a human face to it. Or see this in a lot of just the way these products are often named.
I just saw one of these in a chatbot that has a lawyer's face talking to you as you're engaging.
Right, and you don't know whether and that lack of customer of trust with the users or transparency of whether you're talking to a human or a machine. And it just felt that there was this extreme focus, and in the AI world, a lot of the focus was, could AI pass as human? Like, could you pass that? And that was the ultimate test that we wanted to win. And I never understood it, Bob. Why are we trying to create machines that can pass as humans or pretend to be humans, right? That's the whole Turing test conversation. I just never understood it because I think you're talking to a machine. Yeah, you're proud of being a machine and drive.
Let's call a spade a spade.
Like, what's this trickery? Yeah. That statement came from that fact of if you embrace machines being machines and they're here to solve a purpose and humans are humans and let's value human conversations rather than have machines that pretend to be humans or pass as humans. And I'll give you a very specific example, Bob, of where I truly saw the impact of embracing botanists, so to speak. I think now that I'm more grown up, I'd probably word it differently. But what I really saw this come to life is that you mentioned Rainbow earlier, which is a platform, a product we built in South Africa to help help make it easier for victims and survivors of domestic violence and other forms of gender-based violence ask for help. And some of the challenges, again, similar to my legal tech journey, was a space I knew very little or nothing about and partnered with experts in the field to study the patterns or reasons behind it and what makes it so hard for people to ask for help. And some of the themes that emerged from our research were things like there's a lot of victim blaming involved in the cases of gender-based and domestic violence. And a lot of shame, judgment, and stigma in asking for help, which made it a lot difficult for people to take that first step. And even when they did take action, a lot of the helplines or support places would work Monday to Friday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., when abuse and violence often happened a lot more on the weekends and the evenings. So the model didn't work. We designed a system that was, again, unbiased, non-judgmental in its tone. It was kind of a chat type interface. And it started off by saying, I'm a machine. I have there's no judgment here. Hi, I'm Rainbow. I'm designed to be, I'm a robot and I'm not a human. I'm not going to judge you. And this is what I can help you with. Being very transparent, what it can do and what it can't do. And that's when we really started to see that human behavior shift, that people were more open and more trusting in asking for the help they needed because there was more transparency built in. You would still see some occasional behaviors of, hey, I'm asking for help for a friend. And then partway through the conversation changed to themselves. But that opening up with that, building that trust that you are talking to a machine, I mean, candid about it, really made a difference to that community of people in seeking help versus dealing with the fear of feeling they might be judged.
Yeah. I'm cognizant of the clock ticking away here, and I know we only have limited time to talk, and I had wanted to talk a little bit more about some of the specific products that my listeners are going to be using. And we may not have time to dig too deeply into all of those, but clearly one of the most probably, you know, from my perspective, is one of the most commonly used Thomson Reuters product is going to be Westlaw or Westlaw Edge. And I'm wondering what your kind of roadmap is for that. Are you happy with where that is today? How are you looking to evolve that going forward?
Yeah, Bob, I would just request that we set up a follow-up session to go into Westlaw because we can talk about it for hours and hours. I am absolutely sure. So if you don't mind, I would very much appreciate that that we could dig into it more specifically to be able to do it justice.
I am happy to do that. But let's go back to that sort of comment about open, connected, and smart. I mean, how in general should we start to expect to see that kind of guiding philosophy of product development applied specifically to some of the products that my listeners are going to be aware of and be using?
Yeah, Bob, I would say absolutely the expectation around TR, Thomson Reuters legal products connecting more into the external ecosystem. So this could be whether it's Microsoft-related tools that our customers or users are already using, enterprise connection points. We launched some integrations already with SAP, for example, with Google Tracker. So tools that they're already using, seeing more experiences being built into that. Definitely a lot more of that coming. A few of these highlights launched recently as well. On the connected workflows, bringing more of our expertise. Our mission is to be a content-enabled technology company. So we're bringing in a lot of that content-rich expertise into our technology products as well. So seeing more and more of those journeys start to flow through. And we are really, really excited about ThoughtTrace and bringing in that intelligence where we can combine our human expertise and knowledge with AI capabilities that the team has really developed there at the point of need. And you'll have some pretty exciting things to share in the coming months. So in general, expect more and more faster innovation cycles, turbocharging really, and our products starting to connect and work a lot better together, bringing in our knowledge expertise and content expertise into our software experiences and opening up to the wider ecosystem. Also, would highlight our commitment to open standards such as SALI, that we want to see more and more interconnections of data, easier data flow for our customers to build on top of.
Well, I just last week interviewed for this show Damian Real, who's been involved in developing the SALI standards, and I was going to actually ask you about that. As I understand it, Thomson Reuters has kind of embraced those standards and is working with the alliance to help bring about that sort of universal within a legal world set of standards. So that's in fact the case. You're working at developing those and working with those. And then one other thing you just mentioned is this sort of interconnectedness among products, not just with Office or external products, but internally. So I mean, like you mentioned ThoughtTrace. How does ThoughtTrace begin to fit in with, I don't know, HiQ or other products that you have? How do you see that evolving?
Yeah, so we'll share more on that shortly, Bob, as we're 100 days into bringing the team into the fold. We're so excited on both sides. We're bringing in a lot of those integrations into our existing products, as well as strengthening ThoughtTrace and bringing it to a number of our customers who are so delighted and excited about the opportunity for us to create expertise in this space. Another example, absolutely, we should dive deeper into and share more with you, and how we're bringing in that knowledge into the experience and the workflow of our customers' everyday lives. So it could be in the context of when they're working on a transaction or they're looking at contract reviews and contract lifecycle, which seems to be the hottest thing in legal tech right now. We're seeing a lot of interest from our customers in that space to really create models and technology that helps them identify the clauses that matter the most, the information, the insight that they're really looking for at a much faster pace. We absolutely expect ThoughtTrace to start coming into a number of these experiences and product journeys and use cases that we are solving for our customers as a capability.
Creedy, I've been peppering you with questions for the last 45 minutes. Anything else that you would like to say that I haven't asked you about?
Bob, I just would like to share one hope that I have for the legal industry. Like I said, I felt quite welcomed, having not come from a legal background, but growing up around lawyers and journalists. I just really, really believe this space has truly the opportunity to drive access to justice for all. And I hope that the listeners in this community, this is a polite reminder that the responsibility we have and as people who are working in this profession are building tools for this profession, are supporting the amazing people who are doing this hard work. Remember the opportunity we have ahead of us, because if the best thing we did with legal technology is to make minor improvements to our everyday work, that's okay, but it would be a missed opportunity. We truly have the once in a generation moment to create access to justice, to bring more equity to much larger groups, whether it's someone who's working in an in-house legal department, whether it's someone working in the field of law, legal operations, someone new coming into this industry, or geeks like me who are trying to figure out how to make an impact. We all have this tremendous opportunity, and I hope we don't lose sight of that.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to hold you to your invitation to come back and do a deep dive on Westlaw at some point. I'd love to do that. That would really be interesting. But thank you very much for taking the time to speak with me. It's been a real pleasure and an honor.
Sure. It's been an absolute pleasure, Bob. Bye.
My sincere thanks to Creedy Sharma for joining me today and taking the time to talk about her work at Thomson Reuters. What are your thoughts on today's show? Share them by tweeting us at LawNext Podcast. LawNext is produced, engineered, and edited by Populous Radio. I'm your host, Bob Ambrogi. I hope you'll join us again next time for another episode of Law Next.